So our CTO, in his infinite wisdom, wanted to update a bunch of dependencies before we launch. And I can't get the audio to work at all. I force quit the app, I restart my phone, and I'd get this audio spinner of death. And that's when I kind of like raised a flag and was like, I don't think that this is a product we should push to market right now.
Hello, and welcome to episode 53 of Metacast, Behind the Scenes podcast. I'm your host, Arnav Deka.
I'm Ilya Bezdilev.
And I'm Jenny.
On this podcast, we talk about Metacast, our startup's journey. On our website, metacast.app, you can find links to download the app. It's currently in open beta, as well as our weekly newsletter and links to other podcasts that we do. Metacast is a new podcasting app. It's in open beta right now. You can do some pretty cool things that you can't do in any other podcasting app right now, such as it's not just audio. It lets you read and see the text and use information from inside the text, like bookmark specific things or share it with your friends, search through audio, pretty cool things like that.
With the help of a transcript.
Yes. And there's still a lot of things to do. That's why it's in open beta. We'd love for you to check it out. So without further ado,
Okay. Usually it's babies that are due, not fathers.
Okay, without further ado, so we launched our app on open beta last Friday. So we are recording this on Wednesday, 14th of February. Happy Valentine's Day from the past. But you're probably listening to it on 21st of February or someday after that in the future. So hello, happy Valentine's Day from the past to you. But yeah, we launched the open beta on Friday, 9th of February. And we've been slowly doing some small scale marketing, and we're going to talk about how the launch went so far, what we are finding out, and all of the stuff from there.
Yeah. Before we go to the content of this episode, can I try something new? So I was listening to Justin Jackson's new podcast this morning. They just launched a new podcast called Podcast Marketing Trends. It's Justin and his friend Jeremy Enns, who's also a podcaster. And they do an interesting thing. They said, if you go to Apple Podcasts or Spotify, write us a review or rate us, take a screenshot, send us an email, and we will give you a free copy of my book, The Pragmatic Podcaster. They do something like that as well, but with some PDF. So yeah, why not? If you want to support us, go ahead, give us a rating and also get a free book for doing that.
And we're asking for an honest review and a rating. It doesn't have to be fake 5 stars. If you don't like it, tell us.
Yeah, sure. We are asking for an honest 5-star review.
Yeah. And where can they email us, Ilya?
hello@metacastpodcast.com.
Right. Send that over. All right, let's get started with today's topic. So in the last episode, which was 52, we talked about the craziness leading up to how we decided to do the open beta after all, what led to it. So if you want a bit of backstory and context, go listen to that episode. Today, we're going to talk about how we carried out the launch and what we're seeing since then in the last 4 or 5 days.
So we basically decided we go into open beta sometime end of January.
About like 8 days before we did, I think 8 or 10 days before, yeah.
Yeah. And then we set the launch date for February 6th because the episode 52 was coming out on February 7th. We were like, okay, maybe we should tie this together. Let's do it on a Tuesday, February 6th.
And then we broke the app on February 6th.
Yeah, I just want to say we were pretty much ready, except that the app stopped playing audio on Android. I think on iOS it was failing very often, but on Android it just wasn't working at all, if I remember correctly. Because everything is kind of a bit of a blur.
We had some intermittent audio issues that we were aware of, but we were like, let's just go ahead and launch with this as is. Get it out there and we'll fast follow fix these issues. So our CTO, in his infinite wisdom, wanted to update a bunch of dependencies before we launched. And I'm the only Android user of the three of us. And I was writing in Slack, y'all, it is not working for me. I don't know about you, but I can't get the audio to work at all. I force quit the app, I restart my phone, and I'd get this audio spinner of death. And that's when I kind of like raised a flag and was like, I don't think that this is a product we should push to market right now.
So you pulled an and on cord.
Do you want to quickly describe what an end-on cord is?
Yeah, in the Japanese manufacturing process, which was invented by Toyota, TPS, Toyota Production System, on the factory line, if a worker sees a defect in any of the parts on the assembly, they have this thing, I don't know how exactly it actually looks like in the factory, but it's some kind of like a cord, that you pull that cord and the entire assembly line just stops, just grinds to a halt. Then they go fix the problem to prevent that from reoccurring, root cause it, and then that's how they produce defect-free cars. And the idea there is by giving the workers control over quality and kind of pride over quality and giving them the tool, and it's also blame-free culture, I believe. So it's like you don't get blamed maybe if you shouldn't have pulled it. That helps them make high-quality cars.
For example, like you don't get blamed if you decided to upgrade everything the day before launch.
No, that is different. If somebody pulls the add-on cord on somebody else's upgrade, that's the add-on cord thing.
So, by the way, did you say TPS? Is that where TPS reports come from?
What is a TPS report?
Wait, you haven't seen Office Space?
I haven't.
You have to watch that like before this weekend. You will get all the pop culture references and TPS reports.
Okay, I'll tell my kids that, yeah, instead of having family quality time, I'm going to be understanding the Toyota quality system through the Office Space.
Yeah, yeah. It's important for team culture, Ilya.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I can make this sacrifice.
Okay, but going back to this, I was thinking about it. This kind of a thing, upgrade every possible dependency. We would never do this in a place like AWS because the risk is too high. There's also a very rigorous release process. So all your tests, especially security-related tests and all that penetration testing, all of that have been carried out with a set of configuration or piece of software, and you're not going to change that last minute before the release. Versus a place like now, especially for an open beta, with the cost and benefit ratio being that these upgrades will actually possibly enhance some of the security aspects, which it did, like we use Firebase and there were a lot of upgrades in Firebase dependencies that we did, which was a good thing. But occasionally we have seen that upgrading things because we rely on open source software does break stuff too. I think it's a fair trade-off for especially our scale and size right now and the kind of guardrails which we already have, which is Jenny listening on audio on Android to make sure that it works before we release it to other users.
It's terrifying that that is the release process.
If we did not have Jenny, who is an Android user, we might not have noticed this. Even though you have an Android phone, Arnab, you don't use it regularly. It's just a testing device.
That's after Jenny joined us. Before that, remember, I bought the phone solely because you would test on iOS and I would test on Android. And then now that Jenny is a full-time Android user, I'm like, okay, I don't have to use this.
Just to note, the change that you made was not being picked up in the emulator.
Oh yeah, I was just saying, thankfully I don't have to use Android, that piece of junk. So getting back to it, it's not just us who have technical problems, right? We just had a pretty major hiccup in our recording software. So if the episode does not transition from the last 20 seconds into what we are about to say very naturally, like it does with us most of the time, that's why.
Yeah, and similar to our app, this podcast might lose a bit of context.
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah.
That's a very inside joke.
Okay, so launch day, Feb 6th, we figured out that audio is fairly broken on iOS and completely broken on Android. So what did we do?
I have to say this. So we were on a call, the three of us, trying to figure something out. And then I think Arnab and I, we were basically just talking. And Jenny was intensely looking at her screen, just doing something, like ignoring us altogether.
Multitasking.
I think, Ilya, you and I were actually trying to do something in Spanish. We were asking her and she was not responding.
Yeah, we were just so frustrated and tired. We just distracted ourselves with something else. And Jenny is like, I fixed it. And we're like, okay. Oh, but obviously, as men do, we attributed this success to our chattering in the background.
Actually, that happened twice that day where we had some really insane problems. We could not figure out what's going on. And you and I start blabbering about something and then Jenny comes back after like 15 minutes of silence and says, I fixed it.
Well, let's give some context here. I took on a task that refactored and added some things to the audio, and it has been slightly broken ever since. So I'm very much taking ownership of trying to improve the audio because I'm not going to say that it's my fault. It just turns out that there are a number of ways these different things can go wrong, and we have to tweak a lot of things. So we're slowly inching our way closer to more stable audio experience.
And to give a little bit more, so before this major change in how audio works in our app, we basically use a third-party plugin to do it all. But that plugin doesn't allow you to like configure a lot of background audio stuff, which is important for a podcasting app because you want your like car hardware buttons and maybe your Bluetooth headphones, all those like tapping and all that to work. And so Jenny refactored the audio system. And yeah, major change, minor problems.
But the actual root cause of the thing being broken the day we wanted to launch, it turned out, was upgrading one of our audio plugins and realizing that there was actually some hidden changes we needed to make. Otherwise, it was a breaking change. So just adding a few lines of code did the trick.
I mean, it's an open source piece of software. It's a great piece of software. It does so many complex things, but it was possibly a breaking change that requires more configuration when you change to that new version that was not in the change list. So we didn't think about it. Reading the code, we figured out, okay, or Jenny figured out that we have to do this.
Yeah. So I'm curious if at Amazon, let's say an engineer broke something the day before launch or the day of launch, how much extra paperwork would have to be done explaining for why it happened, root cause analysis, basically all of those artifacts that you have to create to document what went wrong, as opposed to actually spending time fixing it?
First of all, to be clear, you wouldn't do this kind of a thing at AWS because the stakes are too high. You have customers, companies relying on AWS, so you wouldn't do this kind of change. However, there could be operational incidents, like you did something else and that broke. And typically for doing any change in production, there is a very rigorous change management process. So you do have to write up what you're going to change, what you're going to do if it breaks, how are you going to roll back, and everything must have a rollback procedure. But even then, sometimes things do happen. And in that way, I really actually like Amazon's correction of errors, COE process. And Google has probably something similar. Every company does.
They call them also another three-letter acronym. They're called OMGs.
Oh my gods.
Yeah. Nobody ever says, oh my gods. Actually, maybe the acronym might stand for something else. I don't even know. But they're called OMGs and the system is called OMG.
What I like about that process is, again, it's blameless. It's not about who did what, but more about what allowed, like either process or software or something, allowed this thing to happen in the first place, rather than somebody doing something that broke something. I don't know if the difference between the two kind of makes sense, but let's put it this way. A few years back, there was a humongous Amazon S3 outage. Turns out it was because a single engineer ran one command line thing that did something. We won't get into the details. If you want, you can look up S3 outage of 2019 or so. Basically, the whole internet was down.
I think it's public, yeah. It was like tens of thousands of instances were removed by that single typo in the command.
Basically, the internet was down for like a day or so because of this. But that engineer is still at Amazon, or it was when I was there and was doing well. And it's because the process is not about blames or mistakes. It's about what do we do? What do we change in the process so that a single person cannot run this kind of a command ever again?
You know how in corporate, it's important to have visibility when time to getting promoted comes, people should know you. So this person probably has a lot of visibility.
War stories, yes.
Yeah. What are some other ways we broke that? Because that was not all.
Yes. Ilya, do you want to talk about this one quickly?
Sure. So again, the infinite wisdom of our CTO wanted to make sure that we protect our backend from unauthorized access, which is a very commendable goal, to enable app check.
First of all, if this is only my infinite wisdom, I would worry.
No. I was just challenging my inner Jenny here, using her words. Yeah, so app check is this Actually, I don't even know. Is it like a package or it's more like a system configuration?
You can almost consider it like a proxy kind of system that protects Firebase backend, as well as you can use it to protect your third-party backends too from your app or web usage.
Yeah, so we thought we should enable this before we launch. It is reversible, but it is a break and change. And it might take 15 minutes to see that it broke, another 15 minutes to undo it. So it is a downtime.
And it was reversible for 3 of the 4 things we use, but not reversible for 1 thing, which was probably the most crucial thing for apps is authentication.
So yeah, we turned it on and guess what? It broke. We were considering actually turning it on later on in production, but because we had a bit of extra time, we decided to turn it on before we launch. And well, thank God we did. I think it took us, what, a couple of hours of fiddling and testing to figure it out. Again, our CTO figured it out very, very quickly, within 5 or 10 minutes, I think. But it took probably another few hours to get the change into the app, rebuild the app, test it and all that. But yeah, we are sure glad we did it before we launched, because it would have broken everybody exactly the same way, but we would have more users.
Or it would have been a very expensive upgrade process to do this.
Why would it be an expensive process?
Expensive by time, right?
Yeah, expensive as in once you release the app, it's public, it's available. You wouldn't want to do this kind of a change directly on that app and on that backend. So the process would most likely be setting up a different backend, turn it on there, make sure the app can talk to it, and then turn it on in your real backend, the production backend. So it would have taken a lot more time and a lot more effort to do this kind of a change later on.
But setting up this whole development environment and all that, that would have taken probably a few days.
Yep. Okay. After that, I think it was pretty smooth, right?
Yeah, after that, it was just grinding through some of the things. We updated the site. We also enabled the open beta stage in Tramline, which is our CI/CD pipeline software. Tramline.app, I think, is their address. So anyway, we will link Tramline from the show notes. Tramline is awesome, also done by our friends, well, Arnab's friends, now our friends, because we love them. And we also had an episode with them to talk about their product. We wrote a few updates for Reddit. Yeah, it was basically just like grinding through a bunch of these updates. And then on Friday, I think we had the links finally up. But that's what I found interesting. So we had version 56, which was functional, but it had a weird bug with the playlists, but we shipped it to open beta anyway, and Apple approved it within the same day.
Within a few hours, I think, like a couple of hours.
Yeah, but then version 57, which had a fix for that little bug, it took probably 3 days. I think we submitted it on Friday, and then on the weekends, nobody was working. I don't know, because sometimes we get reviews on weekends as well, but not this time. And then it was only approved on Monday, I think.
Yeah, there's like some manual review always happening on Apple's side, yeah.
Yeah. Did you even have to wait for Google to review anything?
No. Google only does configuration level reviews. The actual app changes looks like it's automated testing, because every time we submit it, we do see Google users that we have now figured out that they are like test users, not humans, bots, signing into the app, doing things, and just to make sure that the app is functional.
Yeah, so the other thing that we found puzzling is that being in beta on Google Play Store basically means that you just show up in the Play Store and anybody can download the app. There's a quota. We set it to 1,000 users right now. So if more than 1,000 users use the app, I don't know if it will not show up or if they will not be able to download it. I don't know how it's going to work. But it was surprising that anybody can just go to the App Store and just find it. But that's how Google Play distributes it.
Like you can search for Metacast or you can search for like podcast player and in that it'll show up. And there is a very small disclaimer saying this is in a beta or something like that, right? Which is actually we wrote that. It was not Google doing anything automatic to show that.
Yeah. So we put the word beta right in the title. Whereas with Apple, actually, it's almost the opposite. They give you the link that has very clear instructions, but you have to install TestFlight, which is an app that Apple acquired probably about 10 years ago. I think it used to be a third-party app that lets people like us distribute private apps in test mode right before they're released to the app stores. So yeah, people have to first install TestFlight. Then they click the link, and then they are able to install. It kind of expires after 90 days. So it's very tightly controlled. Whereas with Google, it just feels like free-for-all. I don't know which approach I like more. Google's is definitely easier for the user. Apple's feels like it just gives a bit more control to us developers.
Maybe a bit of safety angle too, because Apple's beta software on iOS, you basically cannot install unless you go through the hoops of installing test flight and acknowledging that this is beta software and you're taking on the risk of installing it. Whereas Google's is almost accidentally, you can search for something, find something that's in a beta, not even in production, and install it without knowing it.
Right. Yeah. And for Apple, you also, you have to have the link. If you don't have the link or the code for test flight, you can't find it. You can't discover it.
Yeah. I think different philosophies to running different sorts of app stores. That's all fair game. All right. Let's talk about the marketing side. Like, what did we do after the soft launch?
Yeah, I think it was Friday afternoon. I wrote a short post about how crazy this week was and congratulating ourselves on launching Metacast to open beta with all the links. It got 6.7 thousand impressions, which is pretty good. You can measure the clicks in LinkedIn. Yeah, I sent out a newsletter on Monday. So yeah, that was on Friday, right? The LinkedIn post on Monday sent out a newsletter. We have just under 400 subscribers. Generally, about 50% of those open our newsletter. So give or take 200 people would have seen the email. Yeah, but then unexpectedly, we also got mentioned on a newsletter called Pod News. And we learned about it because somebody wrote a huge comment under our Reddit post saying that they've downloaded the app and they had a couple of questions and reports to make about the app. That person mentioned that they learned about it, us, on that newsletter. So we asked them for a link and then we found, yeah, there's a small mention, but apparently, you know, people read that and they found us this way, which was pretty cool. Yeah, so far, basically, like, I think every day I've been posting something and mentioning Metacast in my LinkedIn posts. So that gets a bit of traffic. And we still have 300 people who entered their emails in our landing page that we have not reached out to. I do want to get the audio in a better shape before we start reaching out to those people.
To be fair, I think of those 300, there's probably some that already are on the beta, but there's still a good amount of people. And then our personal networks and all that will reach.
Yes, yeah. And I have a rant about this. I recently came across a screenshot or a short video where people were talking about this tool called Taplio that helps you automate your social media engagement. And you can like DM multiple people with a predefined message, all that kind of stuff. And I was looking at this, I'm like, okay, so this is the email spam, but for social.
I think you mentioned it on LinkedIn itself, but there are LinkedIn browser extensions that will basically increase your engagement by replying to whatever post you're seeing and using AI to like generate a comment. And those comments are usually very easy to tell apart that these are AI generated comments.
Yeah, they would be something like AI generated comments are very easy to tell and there are special tools to detect them. What other means do you think we could use to detect AI-generated comments? That's exactly the structure that they use. They reverse what you said and then ask a question.
Yeah, it's a hook.
It's just so lame because now everybody knows they're AI-generated. I was thinking maybe we should use a tool that would automatically send those people an email, something like, you know, those Taplio, but for email. But like, there's something wrong about it. I think the energy of using an automated tool to send 300 emails, I don't like it. So I'll probably start with maybe like top 50. I'll just say, take 50 email addresses and actually manually send them the emails and see what the response rate of that will be. Because I think at this scale, I can afford to spend an hour and a half to just send everyone an email. I mean, it will be the same copy-pasted text, but I could probably deduce the names from the email addresses and just send it from my account. Let's see how that works. Because another thing that is another rant, we were looking at this software called Fondo for taxes. I think I entered my email there to get a discount or something. And I got an email supposedly from their CEO, so it's named by the CEO's name. And that email looks like it's personal email. And it ends with something like, let me know if blah, 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 right? And I just ask him a question in response to that email. Well, it's been about a week. I haven't heard back yet. And that's what I don't like about these kind of personalized emails that make you believe they are personal, but they're not personal. That's why I have this hesitation of using an automation tool for just a couple of hundred of emails.
For our scale, yeah. A personal touch is probably.
For our scale, yeah. Obviously, if you have like 5,000 or more, like you can't possibly do this. With a couple of hundred, you can.
But at that point, like, would you want to make that email feel like a personal email? That's another choice to make.
That's another thing, right? You can make it impersonal because it is impersonal. But if you try to fake it being personal, that's what I don't like.
Yeah. Okay. So it's been like a handful of days since we launched it. Let's talk about a few numbers.
I wish I could prep more numbers for this recording. So just yesterday afternoon, I started working on a dashboard. I mean, we had a dashboard. Well, I guess maybe let's talk about the stack there. Because we use Firebase and we use Google Analytics for events. Actually, both of these have very nice integration with BigQuery. We have a feed of all analytics events into BigQuery. They all anonymize and all. And then in BigQuery, we can make reports on that data. And then we try to use Looker Studio, the free version of it, for visualization of that data. When you do something simple, it works. Something simple means like a simple chart or a simple table. But I was trying to do something more sophisticated, and I didn't like that it basically made me conform. The way I like to do reports, I like to have a view that has a bunch of data in there, and then I can just like slice and dice it in different ways. It's almost like I get a lot of data into the same table, and then I use something like pivot table functionality to get different insights from it. Looker doesn't work that way, unfortunately. So I would have to write multiple, almost like purpose-built queries to get the data that I needed. And I discovered that in Google Sheets, you can actually connect a BigQuery source. And then in Google Sheets, you can use pivot tables. And then with pivot tables, you can build charts from them. And I started doing what I really enjoy doing in both Amazon and Google. I set up a bunch of sheets that have different representations of that data in pivot tables. And they have one sort of huge dashboard sheet that just pulls the data from all of those other sheets. So I can have all of the numbers in the same view in a very nice spreadsheet format that can be easily formatted and moved around, and you can build charts from it. So yeah, I started working on that, but I haven't finished. But what we are seeing now, after launching the beta, we had about 20 users on average or so using the app. And coming back to the thing that you said before, Arnab, every time we submit to Google, the Google Play Store, we have these fake users signing up to the app, creating some activity in app. So it's some kind of testing. If you look at Firebase reporting, it would show you we have something like 170 users or something. It's a very big number compared to what we actually have.
I think more like 250 or so. That's what it shows.
Yeah. Whereas what I think we should be measuring is more like active listeners. So people who started playing an episode. Well, bots can also play an episode. So I guess it's going to be an error built in there. So yeah, I looked at the number of episodes people play and also people who play at least one episode. So an active user is defined as a person who played at least one episode during the day. And also we look at the completion of episodes, which indicates that people actually stick around and use the app. So I haven't built anything more sophisticated yet. But yeah, what we saw is about 20 users, about 40 episodes that they start, maybe about like 25, 30 that they finish, which is much more than we used to have before we launched the open beta. I'm looking forward to actually building out the dashboard in full. And by the time this episode comes out, I think we should include a couple of graphs into the newsletter so that I can share those numbers.
And maybe the next episode we could actually go over a little bit more, because there's a lot of metrics, like what are we trying to measure? Why are those things important to us and all that? I think that would be an interesting part.
Yeah. Also, another meta point here is when we first set up the integration with BigQuery, I built a few dashboards, which sort of made sense at the time during the closed beta time. But they were also hypothetical because we barely had any usage. And now that we have actual usage, I'm starting to rethink what kind of metrics we want to look at, what kind of shape the reports should be in. Whereas if you do it theoretically, it's almost guaranteed that you will have to redo what you've done. I think it's a good insight for the future that it's best to think about what events you want, instrument them, and then actually have the data and then use the data to shape it into the format you want, as opposed to trying to predict everything in advance.
The other, I think, the Reddit, people joining the subreddit and engaging, that has also been pleasantly surprising. It's nothing astronomical, which we never expected anyway, but it's been pretty cool, right? To see about 30 people or so far have joined. There's some chatter in the Reddit posts and all that. So,
yeah, we have 32 users last time I checked. But they said it was an 11,000% growth from the three members we had before. Maybe that's how we should start our LinkedIn post. Like, we grew our community 11,000%.
Yeah. One more quick stat. I was just looking at analytics. Is looks like the Android versus iOS split is almost even at 50-50 now. Although some of that is probably contributed by the Google automatic testers, which don't seem to happen on iOS. So that's cool, because we had very few, one or two only Android users till now.
So what is some feedback that we learned so far?
One thing is feedback also has been coming in from many different channels. We've got emails, we've got Reddit, you have received Telegram, I've received WhatsApp feedback over email. So they're like coming from all sorts of angles, which is cool. It's great to see all that.
Yes, people are sending us DMs, people who know us. Yeah, that's kind of both blessing and a curse. It's great to have all those. It's just difficult to share them with the team because you can't just send them a link.
Right. In terms of actual feedback, I think somebody mentioned to you that the phone was heating up, and then another person also said, and we had never heard or experienced this ourselves. So that was brand new.
Yeah, today it was heating up as well for me, but I was listening to a podcast while also being in LinkedIn. So actually, I don't know which app caused the overheating, but when I locked the screen and put it down, it became cool again.
Yeah, these will be interesting things for us to also diagnose because none of us have a background in app development. This is the first time we're doing something like this. So I'm super excited to tackle these kind of things. The other thing I kind of felt is even on Monday, we were a bit hesitant of like, should we send out this to the newsletter or not? Because there were still intermittent issues with the audio, right? But I think looking at some of the analytics data at least feels like there's a good number of people actually starting or that had used it already by that day, had played episodes, completed episodes and all that. So we decided to ultimately just send the newsletter anyway.
So now that we've launched, I really like how Amazon was putting this. Launch is just day one. Launch is just the beginning. Even though you might have put months or even years into building the thing, it only starts when you actually launch. And that's how I feel now. Because yeah, all of the effort that we've put in, it's all great. But now is the moment, not necessarily moment of truth. Now it's the moment when it all starts in terms of like, it meets the reality. It is what we built, what people actually want.
One more realization I had after launching. So we have been working on this from about March? I think March, that was the first commit for the app. March last year, end of March or so. Do you remember, Ilya?
I remember that in March we had a demo that we used for the Y Combinator.
Right. Or maybe it was February then. February end when we started probably. It's almost a year. But throughout this thing, very early on, it was completely bare bones, right? Like you couldn't browse different podcasts, you couldn't find anything. It was basically what we had put in there. The interface itself was quite janky. There was a lot of gimmicky, hard-coded stuff just for the demo, I think. But over time, until now, I had never paused and thought about how does it feel in the user's hands. And two things change. One is the marketing, the metacast.app website, the image that you put in there. I am HO, in my humble opinion, it looks great. But also like two or three people have told us that they really like the look and feel and how the like information flows and all that. And that kind of finally made me realize that this is actually a real app now. It's not a personal experiment or hobby thing anymore.
Yeah, I've personally become hypersensitive to little bugs now even more, because previously we'd be like, oh, whatever, we haven't launched yet, we can live with that. But now every time something happens and a bunch of things happen now, because it's very unstable right now, I always have this at the back of my mind. Would this be a trigger for somebody to say, okay, I'm done with this and I'm going to move to something else? Just because people have different tolerances for bugs and all.
Of course it would be, right? We are kind of personally invested in it, but most people are not.
So yeah, basically for us right now, the stability issues are the number one priority, because audio fails every now and then the app loses state every now and then, which can be really annoying. Actually, today I was searching something and it lost state. Basically, it went from me typing something in search back to home screen. So I lost all of that progress of typing. It was very annoying. These little things, they happen every now and then. And this is just core functionality. They have to be fixed before we go on to like build cooler stuff.
Right. And I think some of these things are very hard to debug because they are intermittent. We can't really see them on our devices or in emulator. So that's also the next set of things we're doing, is to add more diagnostics features to the app.
Yeah. So one of the things that we will be doing, actually, I don't know, have you already built it or not?
It's kind of semi-built, about 60%.
Yeah, basically we'll have a feature to enable logging. User can choose to enable logging and then send us those logs. Obviously, we're not forcing this onto everyone. So it's only if you want to help us troubleshoot something, you can opt into this. That's something that we are learning with the mobile device. it's a computer in somebody else's hand that the app runs on. Especially on Android, there are so many different devices, and it's just almost impossible to get hold of the logs. So we need to have some tools in place.
And Jenny has fixed a lot of like the current problems already in a PR, so that should go out very soon.
So yeah, let's hear from Jenny, because Jenny, you've been quite quiet today. We are going to our favorite section of this podcast. Maybe we should just have a podcast, book recommendations. But nobody's going to listen to that. So yeah, Jenny, what are you up to now in terms of content consumption?
I am listening to the Elon Musk book on audiobook from the library. It's about 20 hours or so. I'm listening to it at 1.7 speed. And I have 3 weeks to finish it. So I've told my company, the two guys I work with, that I'm actually not using the Metacast app very much right now because I got to crank through this book. So I'm listening to that. And then my daughter has a little bit of an entrepreneurial streak and she wanted to start a banana bread business. So last night we watched an episode of Shark Tank. I've never seen it before, but it gives her a little bit, and me, all of us, my family, a little bit of insight into company building, funding, different things that investors are looking for. I don't know. It's kind of interesting.
Yeah. It's a very different perspective than I think even what you'll normally find in investment circles. I mean, literally, it's called Shark Tank because of a reason, right? In terms of podcasts, so Vision Pro launched, I think about a week ago now, as of this recording. So there's been a bunch of podcasts. The Hard Fork podcast has had it. Brian McCullough's Tech Meme has covered it. So I've been going through all that, trying to figure out. So far, it sounds intriguing. If I had like $3,500 plus tax to like spare on a version one, probably half not working device, I would. But yeah, it sounds so far pretty interesting.
Did you see the Zuckerberg video where he talks about Quest versus Vision Pro?
Not yet. I just saw mention of it this morning. I have not seen it yet.
Yeah, I saw it enough times in my feed that I decided to watch it today. It's about 3 minutes. It's actually quite interesting. I mean, obviously, he says that Quest is better than Vision Pro. But he said a quote. It sounded like he made it up, but apparently somebody else said it before. The best way to predict future is to invent it. I love that. That's why we are on a quest to build Metacast. Our vision is very pro.
Oh my God, yeah. That's an apple of a quote. And then the other thing I've been reading is an audiobook called The Midnight Library. It's incredible. I don't usually read this sort of stuff. It's more of, I think, philosophy and things like that. If you have a bit of like science fiction plus philosophy nerdism in you, I think you would really enjoy this book. It's about the state between life and death. And it's portrayed as if there's a place, a midnight library where you go to, and basically every book in there is a decision in your life that you would have taken differently and how your life would have turned out differently. It's amazing.
Nice. Who is the author?
Matt Haig, I think. I'll look it up.
Is it modern?
Yeah, it's like contemporary. Maybe 15, 20 years back, that's about it. Yeah. Matt Haig, yes. It's an incredible book. And it's got really good reviews too.
Yeah, so I've not been reading much recently. I'm still trying to finish the Children of Dune book, which is the third book in the series. I had to like look into the plot because it's so interesting, but I don't have enough time to read it. Yeah, apparently one of the people there turns into a sandworm at the end. So I'm actually looking forward to reading this because that takes this science fiction slash fantasy to the next level. Also, I had one podcast discovery this week. There's a podcast called Acquired. It's very popular. I heard about it, but I never listened to it. But their host, David Rosenthal, was on Justin Jackson's Build Your SaaS podcast. That's how I got to know about it. So I listened to their interview. Then I listened to the interview with Jensen Huang, who is the founder of NVIDIA, on the Acquired podcast. And I really liked the way these guys, they have done 3 episodes on NVIDIA where they break down NVIDIA, they do all of the research. So they said they've done about 500 hours of research on NVIDIA. And then they got to interview the founder himself. So their questions were very prepared in a way that they don't need to beat around the bush. They know so much about the company that they can go really deep. I really enjoyed that. And I really enjoyed hearing Jensen Huang talk. I didn't know who he was until recently. He's a very wise man. I really liked listening to him.
Acquired is actually one of my favorite podcasts. Their episodes are incredibly in-depth. They're very long, usually. My favorites are the Costco one was amazing. Like, I didn't know about how Costco came to be and how much of an influence all of these, like Kmart, Walmart, Costco, how much they have had across the industry. And the other one I really liked was the Nintendo story. They go all the way back like 100 years and start from the beginning. In fact, that's the episode I used to demo our app at the last Vancouver launch event in like end of January.
That's nice. Yeah, they also speak very clearly, so the transcriptions work pretty well. Oh, they had an interview with Charlie Munger. That was the very first episode I listened to their podcast, but they were sitting in the restaurant. It was just a few months before Charlie passed, so he was 99 years old, and his speech had this kind of crackly kind of sound, like old man's speech, and I could barely understand anything that he was saying, so I actually ended up not finishing the episode, but I was impressed that these guys must be a big deal if they talk to Charlie Munger. I remember this because they mentioned Costco. I think Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, they invested in Costco early on, and they had a conversation about Costco.
I think Charlie Munger or Warren Buffett has some famous quote about Costco and investing in it. I'm forgetting the exact thing. It was in the Costco episode though. Cool. Yeah. It was a great low energy but chill kind of episode. Onwards and upwards to our beta.
To the top and right hockey stick. So yeah, again, no, actually, I don't have enough energy to tell people to leave us reviews and ratings, but if you're still listening to this, please do.
Yeah, you can find us on metacast.app, and there you can find all the links to our newsletter, this podcast, the other podcast we have called Builders Gonna Build. And of course, you can send us an email at hello@metacastpodcast.com. See you next week.